Good morning, Fairbanks. Thank you for listening to KFAR or 660 on the AM dial, 97.5 on the FM dial, or the live stream at KFARradio.com. Today is a recorded show, so please do not call in for any reasons, but it's going to be a good show. Today in the studio with me, I have from the Carter Center a frequent flyer, a good person, and his protege. We have Barry Nicholsberg. How are you doing, sir?
Good morning, good afternoon, whenever people are listening to this. Hi. Nice to be here.
We have Mark Williams. How are you doing, sir?
Doing very well. Thank you so much. How about you?
Good. Now, Barry, I always ask you this question. It's December. I just don't see anyone being mad at the Carter Center, first of all. So why do you always visit me in December?
And you get the same answer year after year.
I know.
Because I love this state, and I love it even more in the wintertime. There's something very special. Being this far north really has some advantages. Just the air feels so crisp.
I may have an alternative explanation.
Oh, please, Mark. Do.
In a meeting one time, Barry made a joke. President Carter made the statement that he would like to outlive the last guinea worm, and Barry thought it would be funny to tell him, well, sir, that's going to be a problem. I'm going to keep the last one alive. It drew chuckles around the table, but not from President Carter. So maybe that's why he's here.
I was wondering where that was going.
Got the big guy a little bit mad, did you? And you end up in Alaska in December. Note to self.
Can't argue with the boss, right?
And sadly, Rosalind did pass away here recently. A very gracious lady. Very exceptional. And I never, after his presidency, I never really thought of President Carter without Rosalind Carter, just the way they were, and an extremely well-lived life that they had together. And I will always, when I think of them, that's what I'll celebrate, that they had such a long time together and many chapters of their life. I mean, many chapters of their life. She was with him when he was at Annapolis as a submarine captain. And he comes out and takes over the family farm in Georgia, peanut farming, and then goes into politics with him. And he becomes a governor of Georgia. Then he runs for president. She's with him there. And, then he's done being president, and they start looking around, what are they going to do? And they had to rebuild their wealth because when they put in blind trust during his presidency, they sort of blew it. And so he redoes that, and then he... with her, and then they look and say, okay, what are we going to do for humanity? And out comes, different things in the Carter Center. And, this is the basics. They go into Africa and places like that and give people water, clean water or clean toilets. Just the basics that we think of. And they did that for humanity. So, Mrs. Carter, Mr. Carter, President Carter, here's to you two. And, I always say when I'm talking about Alaskan pioneers, they don't make them like that anymore. And boy, Mr. and Mrs. President Carter, Mrs. Carter, they just don't make them like that anymore at all. So here's to you.
Thank you. We think that way as well, and thank you for saying so.
Absolutely.
I'd like to give you one quick update.
Certainly.
In 1986, the Carter Center began trying to eradicate a disease called guinea worm from the face of the earth. It was in 22 countries. There were 3.5 million cases of it. People suggested to the president that he could take something on that wouldn't be quite so demanding.
That's not President Carter.
That's it. And as of today, which is the 1st of December of 2023, there are 7 cases left on the face of the earth. So I can't say it will be the second disease to be eradicated from mankind, smallpox being first. But I think we are barely a hair's breadth away from
finishing it off.
Yes. And it has changed the face of Africa. There's educational programs now that couldn't exist before because people were in such agony.
Mm-hmm.
They are now farming because they're not in agony. They're doing a lot of things with their lives that you and I would simply take for granted. But they're doing them for the first time in their lives, including not having as many children because people aren't dying needlessly.
Mm-hmm.
Not that guinea worm would kill you. You just want to die, but you wouldn't. But that's just one of several neglected tropical diseases that President Carter said, we're going to go after these, and we're going to beat them. And with guinea worm, that has happened. It's also happened with river blindness in most countries around the world. Without getting into too many details, it's we've got those things on the run, and we're very pleased with the results. I was about to say we were very proud of the results, and President Carter is a very humble man and would never say he's proud of anything, and if I'm going to represent him, I have to say that as well.
There you
go. And to that point, you know, when they started the neglected tropical disease programs, what he really thought, he and Mrs. Carter, was that there really are no neglected tropical diseases, just neglected people.
There you go. There you go. You know, his their legacy, just put the Carter Center aside, is so rich and deep. Whenever, how many times has a president called up President Carter and say, I need you to go to this country to overwatch the election?
Yeah, that's 118 times so far.
Yeah, because when he comes in, you know, be careful what you ask for, because he's going to call it as he sees it.
Absolutely correct. I've been able to witness that firsthand, in fact. So I was fortunate enough to be deployed to Tunisia for their second ever presidential election.
Ah.
It was a fascinating opportunity. So as a recovering attorney, studied the Constitution and our politics.
Yeah.
It was just fascinating to see the only democracy to come forth out of the Arab Spring, where the Green Revolution began that summer,
mm-hmm.
was just truly awe-inspiring. And to that point, about the Carter Center's work and respect in the space globally, there are usually three organizations around, the United Nations, European Union, and the Carter Center, who do these things and have the respect and usually are invited, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Barry used to tell me, oh, you know, you'll see the results of an election. It'll be reported, you know, Carter Center said, and we get top billing over EU and the UN.
Yeah,
so,
that's right.
I saw that there firsthand when the night of the actual tallying, I was invited to the actual tally section and they were going to open some ballot boxes. And I told the guy who was running this polling station or this counting station, you know, if you really want the legitimacy, you need to bring the EU and the UN folks over here too. It can't just be us.
Yeah.
So, you know, seeing those things, that kind of respect globally. But one thing I'll tease, something maybe we can get to a little later, is some of the work that we're doing now here in the U.S.
There you go. Barry, thanks. We're going to take a quick commercial break. You're listening to KFAR Radio. Again, this is a recorded show. I have Barry Nicholson and Mark Williams of the Carter Center in the studio with me, and we'll be back after these messages. Thanks. Welcome back. I have Barry Nicholsberg and Mark Williams in the studio with me. Barry, how many times have you come up and done this now? About five? Six?
I was going to say 10, and I think it might be even 11, but it's been a long time.
Mark, what do you think?
Well, being here almost 8 years now, you know, I look at this man. He's been a truly great mentor. Has taught me just about everything there is that I could want to know without, you know, telepathically pushing our minds together. So, you know, it's been really a great thing, a partnership that we've been able to build together. And I think that's something that, you know, our unit could be proud of. You know, President Carter wouldn't use the word, but I'd use it. I like the work we're doing.
Let's look at the Carter Center. Let's go back to its foundation. How was the Carter Center founded and when? Let's go through the history.
1981, President Carter stepped away from the White House, and it took him about 6 months to figure out what he wanted to do next. The federal government said, we're going to build a library research center for you. And he said, well, that's nice, but just hang on to that idea for now. Anyway, he sat straight up in bed sometime in late 1981 and said, it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, he said, Rosa, I have the answer. And she looked at him and said very sleepily, Jimmy, what's the question?
And that's why we're a great team,
you know.
And the answer was, let's create a center for conflict resolution. So the conversations that began at Camp David between Israelis and Egyptians could continue.
Menachem Begin and Anwar Sadat.
That's exactly right. And just for the record, there have been any number of administrative changes on both sides, but that one piece that
started it all.
It's still in effect.
Yeah.
They're honoring it on both sides.
Yeah.
And so more than a generation of Israelis and Egyptians have lived side by side in peace. That was Jimmy Carter. He did a lot of things that were great for America. He did that because it was great for people.
I look at that and say, you know, he did a lot of great things for America, but he did that for the world.
Absolutely right.
He did
that for the world. Tell me more about what the Carter Center does. And so he got the answer. Rosalind asked him what the question was at 2 o'clock in the morning. Being the smart person, he goes, what are you waking up and waiting up for at 2 o'clock in the morning? And he got the answer. What's the question? Okay. We're going to start a place for conflict resolution. How did it go from there?
It was pretty straightforward. He opened up something called the Carter Center, found 38 acres of unused property in downtown Atlanta, decided that he would go into partnership with Emory University, which is located in Atlanta, and happened to be that Emory owned this property, and the Carter Center was able to take it on and build its facilities. And for the first 5 years of its existence, it was conflict resolution or election monitoring, one of the two. In 86, the Carter Center branched out to include 5 neglected tropical diseases, to include the eradication thereof. And we're very close now on a couple of them.
Before we get too far away from the actual location for the Carter Center, one thing that I've always found really fascinating is that the location of the Carter Center was the location for General Sherman's encampment as he watched the city of Atlanta burn. So, as you might imagine, back home, that was sort of forsaken land for a long time. So President Carter was very, very thoughtful in thinking about, well, what could we use this for that would repurpose it in a much more positive way. Now, there's another story about how they actually first made a site visit out to this piece of property.
You're so, really going to go there on the air? Oh, my God.
Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, now that we're there.
It's a running joke.
Yeah, but it might be a running joke, but there may be children listening.
Well, you might end up in Alaska, too, in December.
Right, exactly. Here we go. This might do it. So as they go, the police are doing an escort. They arrive onto this opening on the site, and there's a car that's sort of shaking back and forth. Oh. And when the lights and everything arrive, they see two heads pop up. Quickly, they jump into the vehicle, lights come on the taillights, and they drive off suddenly. And then the joke was made, well, I guess this really is where the Carter Center's been conceived.
Well, that, you know, there's always a beginning. And how big is the Carter Center in structure?
Right now, we have 300 staff in mm-hmm. Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
We have 3,500 staff overseas in 72 countries. And then we have 450,000 volunteers around the world. So when there's medication to be dispersed, whatever it may be, we call upon those volunteers, and they're local, so that they're known and trusted.
450,000 people
volunteer for the Carter Center every day.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
That's mind-boggling.
It is mind-boggling.
That's mind-boggling, and I'm glad you said that, and we were able to report that on the air. You know, that speaks for the people that not only founded Rosalind and Jimmy, but the people who believe in it. You know, 450,000 people plus 300 plus 3,500. You know, all doing the work. My goodness.
And most of them are in fact doing the work. Those of us who are in Atlanta, we plan for it, we organize the work, but the staff in Atlanta is not coaxing out the last guinea worm.
Mm-hmm.
The staff in Atlanta is not handing out the medication to rid the world of river blindness or trachoma. That's just not who we are. That is the role of those folks who are trained. They're locally trained. They're locally born and bred. So by their very existence, they have far better acceptance than someone from New York or Atlanta or anywhere in the United States going, hey, I've got the answer for you. Here you go. And that sort of mission statement was very clear to the president from day one, that it was going to be, no matter who did the work, people on the ground locally were getting
the credit.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
And it has been that way. For each time a country has become guinea worm free or river blindness free or trachoma free, it has always been that the Secretary of Health or the Ministry of Health in that country would make the announcement as follows: we have eradicated guinea worm. And we give them all of that. That too is a Jimmy Carter
methodology.
Thanks.
Personality trait. That's it.
Appreciate
Absolutely.
That, yes.
Yeah. And another sort of refining point on that, you know, that goes back to this sort of the volunteers that we serve, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not really that they work for us. We partner with them. And so, you know, it's not this we know what's best. In fact, the development of the straw filters that we hand out, that was something that we saw in the field. So we were handing out very large filter cloths to filter large amounts of water at one time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you have people who are roaming around who need to hunt, etc., and there are these various waterways that they have access to where they could be exposed to the parasite. Well, they're very ingenious. They were cutting off small sections of this filter and then banding it to the end of reeds and using it as a portable filter. And so we didn't develop that. We saw it and we said, you know what, we can refine this and we can actually take this and then get it back to them efficiently and effectively. So again, we try to find ways to work in the communities and with the folks that we're with and always saying, you know, hey, we really want you all to have the responsibility in the end. Work ourselves out of a job.
Sadly, you won't work yourself out of a job. You will work yourself out of that mission but there's always going to be another mission for you.
That's absolutely right.
And that's why you're on the radio with me, because I so believe in your mission, and I'm so impressed with your mission, and I want the radio listeners to hear it and know it. There's always going to be next, and the Carter Center and people who are with the Carter Center, there's no end line, there's no finish line. It's what's next. Yeah, we eradicated guinea worm. We got 7 cases left. What's next?
And there's actually a good answer to that. So it's very sort of closely, I won't say it's not closely guarded, but it's not widely known. Within the Carter Center is an organization called the International Task Force for Disease Eradication. Mm-hmm. So on the health front there, you know, we're always looking at what are the next potentially eradicable diseases, so that as we see successes in each of the areas we're working now, we already have another target or candidate that's up there that we're ready to go for.
Ah,
so
exactly.
That's yeah. Something that we're always doing. But I'd point back to what you said, we'll never be out of a job. You know, to point to Mrs. Carter's work, you know, it's one of the few programs in the United States. It's her mental health programs, yeah. The work for caregivers. You know, I wish we would one day work ourselves out of a job in that field, but, you know, the pandemic and everything has laid bare just how much work there is to go in that space. So we're going to continue going and doing the work of Mrs. Carter.
Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break. We're going to have some Fox News, some state news, some commercials, some weather. And when we come back, we're going to talk about Mrs. Carter and her work in mental health. We'll be back after these messages. Fairbanks, welcome back. Again, this is a taped show, so we're not going to be taking phone calls today. So I'm not even giving you the phone number, but you all know it anyway. So what the heck? And I have in the studio with me here, Mark Williams and Barry Nicholsberg of the Carter Center. Gentlemen, how you doing?
Great today, David. How are you?
Doing well. How do you like Fairbanks, Alaska in December?
I love the cold, but personally, I can't get enough.
Yeah, it's not cold.
Yet.
Right, it's only zero. So that's right.
So, again, Mrs. Carter, she recently passed away. And I have to ask the question or the thought, I bet you Jimmy Carter knew, President Carter knew, when he had the answer, what else was going to happen. His partner in life was going to come involved, too.
Absolutely right. He looped her into that even beforehand, right, Barry?
He looped her into that in 1966, which was the first time he ran for governor of the state.
Mm-hmm.
She was outside a mill that was shift changing at 4:30 in the morning, shaking hands, and some woman came up to her and said, if your husband becomes governor, what's he going to do to help the mentally ill in our state? And she looked at the woman and said, I have no idea, but I'll ask him and get back to you. That night she saw him. She asked the question. He said, we're going to have the finest program to help those who suffer from mental illness anywhere in the country. Other states will emulate what we're doing because it is that good. And she said, oh, Jimmy, what are you going to do to get there? He said, I'm going to form a commission and appoint you chair.
I take after that trait. You know, when someone comes to me with a problem, line them out and say, no, go get it. Go do it.
And from 1966 on, when he was elected governor in 1970, his first official act was to close the state insane asylum. His second official act was creating this commission. His third official act was appointing his wife as chair of that commission. And then there was an inaugural ball. So those things came first. And Mrs. Carter has always come first.
Mm-hmm.
And there are lots of stories coming out about her right now because she has recently passed.
Mm-hmm.
And I love those stories.
Yes.
You know, she was one. Here's one I doubt any of your listeners would know. I was working in one of the small conference rooms at the Carter Center. There are two doors to it. I was jotting down some paper, something. information, and suddenly the lights go off. Hey, what happened? And Mrs. Carter says, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't think anyone was in this room. She was walking around making sure that if a room was empty, the lights would not be on. That was someone who knew how to spend wisely, mm-hmm. and not. And she even considered, if you're in a room and the lights aren't, and the lights, if you're not there and the lights are on, that's frivolous. So.
Yeah.
And that mentality pervades throughout. We do definitely try to uphold President Carter's level of frugality, let's call it. Mm-hmm. We definitely try to be wise stewards. But one thing I would point back to with Mrs. Carter, you know, she definitely, she's such a the term steel magnolia was used multiple times in the papers back home. So that's a little bit of a Southern term for those mm-hmm. who may not know, referring to strong Southern women. But you could see that all the way around. It was very funny. The two of them, President and Mrs. Carter, if they'd be out somewhere, President Carter would be up on stage. If he got a fact wrong, Mrs. Carter would not hesitate to march up on stage, take the microphone from his hand, and correct the record on the spot. So the two of them were always just such amazing partners. And to see her being recognized as a full partner, a co-equal for President Carter, has been really wonderful. Not sure if folks had heard this very widely, but last year she was honored by the World Health Organization for leadership in mental health advocacy across the globe. So it was really wonderful to have that opportunity to recognize her.
You know, you look back, and now mental health is such a important part of things, or treatment, or recognizing it, or having processes. You know, in the city of Fairbanks, we have people who really work on mental health for the disadvantaged people. State of Alaska, the same way. But it all comes back to President Rosalynn Carter. If you look at the trail, that's actually where it starts.
Absolutely right.
And the more, as time goes by, I would say over the last 8 years, it's really become prevalent. I mean, mental health. If you look at the military, they have programs just for people's mental health, and for the family, and for the kids. You know, it doesn't mean you were in combat, but for your mental health, we have programs for you. And you just look at the trail, and it all comes back to 1966.
David, you're absolutely right. Yes, everything you just said is true. When our troops came home from Vietnam, they were spit on. Mm-hmm. They were called baby killers. They were told, oh, just shut up, get out of that uniform, find a job, and get on with your life.
Yeah.
And a lot of people committed suicide because they had something we didn't understand. We didn't have a name for it. We do now, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yeah.
And because of Mrs. Carter, there is not a state in this union, there is hardly a city or even a village in this union that does not have mental health services. Yeah. That is that's the result of her work right there.
You know, and it's the sad part is we recognize that now. The good part is we start recognizing it before she passed. And boy, that's where it started with Rosalynn Carter saying, Jimmy, this is what you're going to do. And
she still continues to have her fingerprints on another key pillar of her mental health advocacy, which was getting mental health care to receive the same type of coverage under your health insurance plans mm-hmm. as any other kind of condition. And so with the Affordable Care Act, that was made law that mental health, you know, treatments yep. got parity. And that is Mrs. Carter again. That was part of her lifelong work. And it's one of the things that I know, you know, would define her legacy. So we're very proud of that too.
You know, the city of Fairbanks, we have a person who's funded by the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority. And she's trying to get a crisis now stabilization center for someone to bring them in for a 3 hour to a two, you know, a 24 hour period just to let them stabilize in a nice environment, you know, warm, not in a jail, not in a hospital, not in the ER room, not, you know, not outside. And they also have the crisis now intervention team. Instead of sending over police officers to people, they send over this team. And, you know, if you look at the trail, you know, she started it, and the branches and the way it's woven. But if you look at it, boom, it's Rosalind Carter.
Absolutely.
Who started this.
Those core tenets of compassion, you know, those are really the things, right, that found or undergird all of that. And you're so right, David.
Yeah. And, as a mayor, I look at reports, you know, on a monthly basis on how many call-outs they had. And it's shocking how many call-outs they get. And I say to myself, this is such a good group of people to have, because you're not sending a police officer there who are very fine, but you're sending mental health clinicians.
Absolutely.
Trauma people. This is what they're trained at. You know, talking a person through whatever that crisis is, getting them through it so we can last another day. So, and Mrs. Carter, hey, you know, like I said, they just don't make them like they used to. And Fairbanks, we're going to take a commercial break again. You're listening to KFAR. We're having a program that's taped here, so no call-ins, and we'll be back after these messages. Fairbanks, welcome back. I have in the studio with me Barry Nicholasberg and Mark Williams, and we are talking about the Carter Center, who they represent, and just learning about it. My goodness, 450,000 people that are volunteers on a daily basis, 3,500 people that are employed in 72 different nations, and 300 people that are in Georgia next to Emory University, where the Carter Center is established. What's on your horizon?
Well, you know, the future looks bright, I would say, all around for everyone. The Carter Center, all those folks we're working with, in the summer of 2020, during the depths of the pandemic, we brought on a great, great new CEO. Her name is Paige Alexander. We're very, very fortunate to get her. She has been instrumental in transforming the organization and our views into the future. She's been focusing a lot more on some of the need to look at what's going on in the United States, in our own backyard. Mm-hmm. But she's also focused on really building out a wonderful core team of two new vice presidents who are really the heads of our two sides of the house, peace and health. Barry, would you mind giving them an update on our two new VPs?
Well, they are more than two. We've created a new position, a vice president for philanthropy, a vice president of overseas operations, mm-hmm. a vice president of communications. Time and again, we've been told, you're the best kept secret in America. I never heard of you.
Yeah.
If I'd stopped 100 people on the street and said, what did Jimmy Carter do after leaving the White House? Every one of them would have said, oh, he builds houses for Habitat. And they are shocked when they learn he only did that 1 week out of the year.
Yeah.
And the other 51 weeks was with the Carter Center. So figure out why. He's very humble, and he did not let his communications staff blow his horn. when World Health Organization came along on National Public Radio, they had a nationwide interview, and they claimed to have helped to, they didn't claim help, they claimed that they eradicated guinea worm from the face of the earth. I went into the office, I said, what are we going to do about this? And the response was nothing. Why? Because the goal is all that really matters. Mm-hmm. Who takes credit for it is immaterial.
And those people who need to know will know.
Yes, there is that too.
Yeah.
But President Carter, Mrs. Carter as well, rarely took credit for what they accomplished. They didn't mind having other people say, I did this. Makes no difference.
You know, it's interesting, the two divisions, peace and health. And if you look at President Carter, those are, yeah, that's him. That's him. Now, also, your toilet construction.
That. In Ethiopia.
Yeah.
While we were trying
to.
And
you think I don't know, I don't follow you guys.
We need to get this guy a T-shirt.
We found out that trachoma, which is a disease that flies land on human feces, mm-hmm. and then they pick up a bacteria, bite around the eyes, and when they do, it creates an infection that dries out the eye socket, and then the eyelids invert. And when they invert, every time you blink, you scratch your cornea. Of course, the question is this. Yeah. How often do you... I'm going to give a piece of trivia to all of your listeners
probably
now.
About every second to every other second.
Well, we blink 15,000 times a day.
Yeah.
Now imagine 15,000 times a day, every day, feeling like a little knife is being poked into both of your eyes.
Oh, my goodness.
So what happens with that is... we decided to have a little experiment, and we went out to build 825 latrines, help people learn how to build them, help them how to maintain them, show them how it works.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And ladies in one of the villages asked if we could build more, and we asked why. And they explained that in their culture, a woman is neither allowed to urinate nor defecate during daylight hours because a man might see her. And so they had very few choices. They could retain, they could go in the water, which they used for cooking and cleaning. That was it. That's all the choice she had. Consequently, women were dying of urinary tract infections and obstructed bowels pretty regularly. Well, we only went out to build 825 of them.
That was just the beginning.
Yeah, pretty much. It's been about 100,000 a month now for 9 years.
So basically, you've made over 10 million.
Yes. Yes.
I'm pretty good at simple math.
Yeah.
And I round up.
The fact is that, yes, we have created 10 million latrines
mm-hmm.
in Ethiopia. And because we even have T-shirts for people who help. I dig latrines on the back with the Carter Center insignia on the front. That's how we know who's the election observer and who's the digger.
Two for one.
You know, boy, and most people don't know this.
That's right.
That's why I so appreciate Barry coming in and bringing you, Mark, the next generation, and once a year, and just getting caught up and going through what the Carter Center does. How do people donate to the Carter Center?
So we get a lot of different approaches. Barry and I work with folks typically who are giving things through their estate plans, whether that's mm-hmm. a will. We also have charitable annuities. People can give money and then get a lifetime income in return. a couple of interesting and tax-wise things like that. But we also have individuals who send in money. We get money from the United States government, a few other foreign governments fund some of our international observation work. But for individuals, there's a really easy way to get involved and find out more information. It's just as simple as going to our website, which is cartercenter.org.
And there it is.
It is.
And also, you go to the Carter Center.org, you're going to learn a lot.
That's right.
You're going
to... It'll be like drinking from a fire hose, so I would suggest take your time, you know, one section at a time.
be a repeat offender and going back to it.
Absolutely. Or there might be an even easier approach. Barry and I are always available if folks want to have additional information on that website. You can find our contact information. We're always happy to take a call. Always happy to put you in touch with someone if you've got very deep questions.
You know, the world is in a flux and is a dangerous spot. Do you find sending envoys out to, say, Israel between the issues there with Israel and Hamas, or Ukraine and Russia? Do you have people that are trying to make a difference, or your peace and health? So
we actually have offices in Jerusalem. We have offices in Ramallah. And until recently, we had an office in Gaza City. And being one of the few people who have visited all three of those offices myself, I can speak firsthand about a lot of what I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Suffice to say, President Carter has always thought there is some solution out there that will end the animosity. And even though he's been in home hospice since February, he is still saying this because he's mentally as sharp today as he ever was. He says, until Hamas gives up this first article of its existence being to kill every Jew on earth and to wipe Israel off the face of the map, until that happens, nothing can be peaceful.
Yeah.
And they have just refused categorically to even consider that. And so we end up with horrific acts. And I just wish they had... he believes that if he had 4 more years in office, he could have accomplished that. But he didn't.
Yeah.
And so the Carter Center was born. And the Carter Center has done amazingly good work with Sudan and South Sudan, with any place where there is conflict, to bring people together anonymously is something we've been able to do. We don't talk about the specifics because we want to give the credit to others who come on the air and say, hey, we did this. Great. But we are behind the scenes, and we're doing some amazing work.
We have about a minute left. Mark, how do you want to close with your portion?
Just very grateful to have the opportunity to come in today to talk with you about the work of the Carter Center, but also thank you for providing the space for us to reflect on Mrs. Carter and all the great things that she's done. I'm so grateful for that.
You know, I've been... You know, Barry made the call to me about a month and a half ago, and then when she passed last week, you know, this was going to have a lot of Mrs. Carter footprints on this. Barry, it's our last go around there, sir.
It is, yes. I retire at the end of December here, so just a few more weeks. But I leave you in great hands with Mark Williams, and I have no doubt that he will be able to return in the years ahead and bring you up to speed on what's happening at the Carter Center. I really appreciate it. David, I just want to say that over the 6, 8, 10 years that we've been doing this, how much I appreciate getting to know you.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure and an honor, and it really has. And Godspeed to you and your retirement. Mark, you're going to be a frequent flyer.
Amen to that. I'll be looking forward to seeing you again.
Fairbanks, that is our show. You have a great day, and we'll see you soon.